The Broadcast, the biggest podcast in Vancouver, pretty much.
We participate in light misandry. Get out of here with that. Sexism. All of our societal structures are designed in ways to inherently prejudice women.
I don't like to be bamboozled.
Hi, Georgia. It's Troy Stetcher here. Thank you for labeling me the short king.
Vic actually just got the sweatshirt that says Mock Girl Summer.
I think it's amazing what you guys are doing. I'm having a lot of fun.
Hello and welcome to the Broadcast. I'm Georgia. I will be your host for this week, and I'm joined by Mallory and Sam. And we are going to be talking about some very fun things today for people. We'll put in the episode notes when we actually touch on the Jake Virtanen allegations, just so that people can skip ahead if they don't want to listen to that content. So just keep your eye on that. But we will be discussing it early on in the episode, just to warn you. But we will start, as always, with our highs and lows of the week. And I believe we have a new review. Sam, would you like to read it?
We do have a new review, which is really exciting. The title is Spin the Wheel of Chaos, which I really enjoyed. 5-star review. It says, I find myself waiting on the edge of my seat every week to hear what insight these ladies bring to the table. What other podcast is willing to point out all of the flaws with hockey culture on a consistent basis, provide tangible steps to make changes, and make you laugh? Spin the Wheel of Chaos. The most diverse group of guests means never having an inkling of what's coming next. Keep up the excellent work, ladies, and don't let anyone try to change who you are. And that was from Puck Nerd Hockey. So thank you very much for that. That was really nice. Anyone else wants to leave us reviews? That would be really nice as well. As always, hit subscribe, leave us 5 stars, et cetera, et cetera. We love hearing from you guys.
Okay. That was very nice. What other highs did we have for this week?
Your birthday?
Yes. Okay. It was my birthday yesterday. And there was a cameo that occurred.
I was going to say that it was her birthday. Did you know that Georgia had to make her own birthday cake?
Okay. I was like looking at the pie. And I was like, the pie looks really good, but I'm also pretty sure she made it.
Yeah, I did. It was the Allison Roman key lime pie. Izzy can grill that and make scrambled eggs. And that is the limitations. He can't cook rice or pasta. So he couldn't bake a pie.
Those are really easy things.
I know. He's very impatient. He gets really frustrated, blah, 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 whatever. And his idea of a birthday cake is a Dairy Queen ice cream cake. And it will be until he's dead. Like, that's all he wants ever. So, so I made my own birthday cake. But usually my dad makes it for me. He's like a really good chef. And so usually he makes it. But I obviously couldn't see my parents because we were in lockdown. So I made it myself and it was very good. I recommend.
Was it hard to make?
No, there's like 5 ingredients.
Interesting.
I'll send you the recipe. Pie this weekend. It was really, it's really good. Really, really.
I know. I was looking at your photos.
Yeah, it's just graham crackers. This is the hard hitting stuff that you guys listen to us for.
This is really the hard hitting stuff.
But Sam and I need to have a baking show because also, the amount of times, Sam, that David Quadrelli, hi quads, has told me that he cannot wait until this is all over so we can actually teach him how to make bolognese sauce.
Oh my God, that'll be so fun.
That will be our crossover episode. Teach David how to make pasta. Anyway, say what you want, Mallory.
I was going to say something in defense of Izzy almost.
Do not defend that man.
I was going to say, although Izzy can't cook and also apparently just like is trying to make it so Georgia has to sleep in an igloo with no sheets.
Correct. Either.
He does do a very good job at his Instagram boyfriend. And obviously I'm not there. I'm just assuming that he, with minimal complaints, will do.
He complains. I will set up the background of this photo that I took for my birthday.
She's done it like 2 years ago. And I've been like, Izzy's doing well.
There was 2 outfit changes. I did one with one version with straight hair, one with curled. There's, I'm not even kidding, probably 150 photos on my photo reel. And he freaked out because he had to stand at the very edge of the balcony to take the photo and was like, I am getting dizzy. I cannot keep doing this. And what happens every year is he takes a bunch and then I go, I hate them all. They all suck. This is awful. And then 2 hours later, I'm like, actually, this one is fine. It's ridiculous. He does a good job at that. And
he does a great job.
I did, speaking of Izzy though, I liked the idea someone had about doing an episode where where if you couldn't make it, Izzy would sub for you. And then we turned that into Jeff, Izzy, and Mal.
Yeah, broadcast Wags plus Mal.
That would literally, they would hate it. They would hate that experience.
Izzy would have a good time.
I think Jeff would.
He's also broadcast trained.
So yeah, that's true. He'd be like one of those people that were like, whenever we have people who are like literally just trained, we just like say one thing to them and then they just talk for 30 minutes and we're like, okay, cool.
So Jeff is not trained, but he does like F1, so you could have another
one. Let's go, Jeff.
Oh, Izzy can talk to you about Arsenal and Jeff can talk to you about F1. This is great,
actually, yeah.
6 months later, Mal started a new podcast. Sam and I are just like,
she's replaced both of us. We're doing our baking podcast instead.
Yeah. Teaching Canucks Twitter how to cook. Okay, talk about the cameo.
You get told to go to the kitchen.
Oh my god, yeah. Okay, so the cameo, which I have still not watched all of it. I have not watched all of it.
It's not actually that bad. I've watched it four times now.
I know, like, it shouldn't be that embarrassing, but every time I start it, I'm like, oh no, I can't do this.
It's not even about you.
I know. It's just that humiliating. Like, the concept in itself, I hate. Which actually, okay, so before we were talking about birthdays, and I'm a Leo, and obviously Georgia is a Taurus, and Georgia was like, oh, I don't really like my birthday because I don't like being the center of attention, and I was like, can't relate, but okay.
but I was Leo, saying,
I'm a Virgo.
Oh, you're a Virgo.
Virgo, come on.
Sorry, come on. I know she's also in August.
I'm extremely Virgo.
but I was saying that I was like, this is like literally something you said in the chat, and it was like, I don't know, because as I have said, I have not watched the entire cameo. Something like Tyler Mott like mentioning like the podcast. I was like, God, fuck, no, please don't perceive us.
I don't think that's even what he said, though. That's why I was so confused.
That's not what he said.
Yeah.
I don't know what he said, because I told you I did not watch it.
No, he said, I know Mott's really involved with you. He's a short king, said, too. Yeah. So is Quinn. And he just said all the short people on the team.
Yeah. He didn't
How tall is Tyler Mott?
I think he's 5'10". He's not.
He did not in fact say that Tyler Mott told him all about the broadcast, which is what I think Vanessa said.
Vanessa said that, and I was like, God, fuck, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he said that. She said he said that, and I had a mild panic attack, watched it again. I was like, no, that's not what he said.
No, he just said then. He knew that we had like talked to Tyler Mott, basically.
Which is fine.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, 20,000 people have watched this cameo, and I want to die, so.
I googled the key lime pie and I'm just like looking at photos of it.
It's so good, Sam. It's really, really good.
It looks really good.
The worst thing about like, I really like baking, but I don't like the fact that I have to consume that entire thing then, you know?
Yeah.
I wish like you could do like single servings.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Any other highs and lows to discuss?
No. Just, you know, have fun at that.
Lots of fun hockey going on. Lots of white dudes on skates running into each other at full speed. Let's do that hockey. Come on.
Okay, we are going to talk about sports. And now we are going to start with Jake Virtanen and the allegations of sexual misconduct against him. So hop off now, because this is your content warning or your trigger warning about the conversation that we will be having. And again, we'll put in the episode notes when it ends, so you can kind of just skip ahead to there. So yeah, I don't even remember the timeline of this, but I think it was last Friday was when the news really hit. Am I right? Friday, because then Saturday he didn't play.
Right.
So Friday news kind of broke about this story on Twitter, started on Twitter as things tend to do. And then by the next day, Chris Johnson, I believe, was the first person who reported that Virtanen wasn't skating in the Game Day Skate. And then the Alana Kelly piece came out, which outlined the allegations from the survivor of the in the story. And then the Canucks also released a statement basically saying that they were aware of the allegations. Jake had been sent home away from the team, that they were on that a external investigation was being undertaken, and that the team doesn't condone any of any behavior regarding sexual assault or sexual misconduct. Oh, and then Travis Green had to be the person who was brought in front of the press to kind of answer these questions. And he basically just said no comment. And he just, yeah, he was very good with it. I will say he acknowledged that he understood why the reporters were asking, but basically that he just didn't have anything else to add to the conversation. And I think, yeah, that was, it was a lot. Those few days were a lot. I know Sam was having a very fun time on the twitter.com. And yeah, I don't even know where to start with this. It's obviously kind of a challenging subject to talk about, especially right now. But yeah, I don't know. Does anyone want to jump in?
I mean, I think that the Canucks, obviously they didn't, apparently they were informed that this was going to come to light. But I do think that they have dealt with it in the appropriate manner, like so far. I mean, I don't think that there really is much else that they can say and do regarding this. And it is such a rampant, like, there is such a culture probably of just general sexual misconduct within the NHL, and not even within like sexual assault, but also maybe just sexual situations that leave women feeling uncomfortable, like situations that are actually in that gray area of being like, well, I didn't 100% feel like there was a situation, like there was like a power imbalance in all of this. And I think that this is more prevalent than we actually talk about. And like, we talk about it a fair amount. Like, there's been a lot of allegations against hockey players and their general misdeeds, but I'm sure there's tens to hundreds of other women who have similar stories. And I think that it is important that we listen to them as much as they want to talk about it, because I think that mostly due to our, I guess due to the idea that like people think that everything is kind of their business, people aren't willing to just be like, here, oh, so-and-so, I had like sexually assaulted me. They're needing the full details and rundown of every single thing that happened, which re-triggers survivors, re-triggers the survivor, like the person who's talking about it themselves. And it's really just kind of an inopportune situation. It's really shitty. I don't know.
I thought the first issue that I had with what happened was that there were people taking screenshots of the private survivors group and sharing them on Twitter and basically being like, oh, if you want to know what happened, here it is. And I think the first person who tweeted it and had kind of had it go viral on Twitter has since deleted their account, but they basically tweeted it with a comment that he did it. And there were a lot of comments following that said that, and notwithstanding that obviously believe women and believe survivors, it's not helpful to take someone's comments in a private forum meant for informal reporting and support and to retweet it without her consent, because obviously that's a violation of her agency, which to the extent that you think, you know, obviously it's not comparable, but it is kind of analogous. Like, the worst thing you can do for somebody who's gone through that is to then take away their voice and their control of their story. It's just another violation. And also, I think I said this online, but like, you've also just potentially exposed yourself by repeating that to an actual defamation suit if he decides to pursue that, which he's entitled to do under the legal system. I also just like, I struggle with whenever we have these stories, and we talked about this, but like, I thought most of the Vancouver media did a commendable job of reporting on it in a very kind of balanced way and trying to center the story from the survivor's point of view. I was glad to see that, but obviously a lot of the discourse online is from like fairly thoughtless people who are like, what happened to like innocent until proven guilty, like really just repeating debunked rape myths. And it's like, well, you can't really go around when somebody expresses their opinion and says, believe survivors, with like, there is a presumption of innocence. There is no presumption of innocence in social discourse. Like the only time the presumption of innocence arises is if you are literally being charged by the state and you are in a court of law where the state has accused you of committing a crime. That is when you have a presumption of innocence. It's a legal construct. You don't get to walk around and be like, you have to presume he's innocent. I don't have to presume anything because it's my own opinion. And like, as long as I'm not walking around being like, he factually did that, because then he might sue me for defamation. And I don't like want to expose myself to that. I can say whatever I want if it's an opinion. And
yeah, your like moral opinion and moral like decision on like, this is kind of in a situation I'm not even like relating to men in power, but like literally just holding your like friends accountable in situation and people in your community, literally nothing is stopping you from just being like, I don't fuck with this person anymore. Like you don't need like a handwritten note of every single thing that went down in like an incident for somebody to be like, oh, I actually am not going to spend time with this person. Which I would advocate for any predominantly of our male listeners, any of them, to please hold your friends accountable for shit they've done or shit they like have talked about in a callous way in general. You don't have to have a full trial. You can just be like, that's kind of shitty and I'm not going to spend my time with that, because you'll have a finite amount of time on earth, and don't spend it with people who assault women.
Yeah. It's also just a bullshit concept to be like, he's not guilty unless he's proven guilty in a court of law. Because like we've said before, our legal institutions are patriarchal in nature because they're historically built by men for men. And like, even when you look at actual court decisions, the courts have acknowledged that they are not good at dealing with sexual misconduct cases, because the legal system is not set up for any woman to be able to prove that she was sexually assaulted. It's
because it's
completely fucked up.
The idea I saw a lot of this was, it's just he said, she said, like all this kind of stuff. And the immediate presumption from that then is that this person is lying, because we live in a world that predicates upon the idea that women lie. Like the most famous woman, Eve, like, these are the stories that we're told, that women are inherently mistrustful. And so when you start from that point, it's not great. And I will say, the Vancouver Police Department has opened up an investigation in regards to this. I don't know if it was because she, the survivor, asked for this to happen. I don't even know if she wanted the story to necessarily be told in the way it was, or to be made public in the way it was this quickly, or how it happened. I'm assuming probably not, but this is where we are. So that is happening. That was kind of the news, I think, yesterday and today, the most recent update. And I will say, just to echo what Sam said, my first kind of reaction to this was immediate dread, because I knew that Twitter is just a cesspool of terrible, quote unquote, hot takes. And this is the moment when those, especially in like the sports realm, it's not about the third line, who's playing third line minutes. It's not about Travis Green as a coach. This has such real world implications that my immediate reaction was, oh my God, I don't want to have to watch people use this as an excuse to talk about someone as a hockey player. And immediately this stuff was about Foley, et cetera. Not great. And then I was also really scared about the press coverage, because this is a super public team. Obviously, this is a super public moment. You have a lot of eyes on it. This is one of those moments when news crosses over with sports. And you know that there are going to be women watching this who have experienced sexual assaults, who haven't come forward, who maybe have had this with a hockey player as well. And you know that how this coverage goes might impact their own lives and experiences. And whether that means that it inspires them to come forward or it doesn't, or whether or not it just re-traumatizes them in the way it's covered, was really awful. And that's all I could kind of think about within that first kind of 12 hours of the story. And I will say that the coverage has been very good so far, to be honest. I think Durant's piece, Thomas Durant wrote in The Athletic, his column was really good. And it was really important to kind of just state, this is where we're at. This is not about the Canucks. This is like, right, this small case of it, like whether or not this happened or didn't happen, this has nothing to do with hockey in this case. Potentially it will later on when we discuss kind of larger things, but this is not a debate. Like, this is not the time for hot takes. This is not the time for that. And that was really important. And then I was listening to the radio and you had like Vancouver radio guys be like, you have to listen to women. And it was really important. Like, that stuff is really important to say. And I think that like that has been really heartening so far. And, you know, things can kind of go haywire, but that was really good. And then on the VanCast, they had Katie Strang on and she talked about covering these kind of cases. And again, I think it was really important. And like, shout out to JPAT, who was basically like, acknowledged that he doesn't know how to do this. And he wants to make sure he's asking the right questions and how to do that. And I think these conversations are really important to have. So I'm like, really happy that that's how it's been. And I hope that keeps happening going forward with the whole situation. My, like, the last kind of things in terms of how this continues on, there will be questions about the team's handling of this, how that went about. And I'm sure that that's something that Elena Kelly will follow up in her reporting, and then the investigation and how that goes. And particularly in this city with our history with the Whitecaps, the need for transparency in how that investigation was kind of carried out and who did it is pretty important. I will acknowledge that right away, that doesn't need to happen. There's a lot of issues in terms of people feeling safe to actually be involved in the investigation, but later on, like, that does need to happen. Any other thoughts on this situation or what we want to talk about in regards to it?
I think I just like want to briefly like talk about and touch on the kind of like myth of like the prevalence of false allegations. I just think that oftentimes people think that people are trying to like claim things for clout or whatever, as if that, I think it's like less than 1% of like rape and sexual assault allegations are proven false. There's no, especially in a situation where you would put yourself under so much scrutiny, which I don't believe she actually intended to do that. I don't believe she intended to bring this publicly, but there's no reason that somebody would want to open theirself up to that. And there's not much you could gain out of it, actually. There are so few people that have gained like financial or social success through falsely accusing somebody of rape or any other sexual misconduct. People love to quickly jump to that, but there's no reason that somebody would do that. I don't know. That's all.
There are also a lot of instances where people suggest that someone has made a false report where what was actually concluded was that whoever was doing the investigation couldn't make a determination about their allegations. And I think there's a very important distinction there. Like, not being able to conclusively say that someone was raped or assaulted is not the same as finding that someone made a false report. And I think a lot of people rely on women who have gone through a process where somebody says there wasn't enough evidence to prove what she said, and people turn around and say that was a false report. And that's actually just factually untrue. It's actually just incredibly difficult to prove that it happened for a variety of reasons. And like Mel said, any woman, like, all you have to do is look at any news story of any kind of sexual assault allegations, and you will see the amount of vitriol and comments that people direct towards women. Even people who are like, oh, the guy was totally at fault, but she should have been smarter. She should have done this. Why did she do that? Like, the immediate reaction of everyone is to question everything she did, to dig through like her history. Like, no one exposes to themselves to that kind of scrutiny from like absolute strangers for the amount of time that these investigations go on for money. Like, there is no amount of money that you could pay anyone to deal with that kind of unhinged scrutiny. And like, anyone who suggests that, sorry, you're a shitty fucking person. That's all I've got for you.
Yeah, I think like my immediate thoughts are like, we think of like the biggest, most public cases like this, and you think of like Anita Hill, and then Christine Blasey Ford as well. Mass amounts of scrutiny, horrifying amounts of scrutiny. And how did that end up? Not great. So like, historically, you know, like, there is an awareness of how this can go. I think, so the statistics that I read, it was between 2-8% of cases. But again, that comes from a pool of cases that doesn't even encompass all the sexual assault that happens, because how much of it is reported, Sam? Like 5%? Yeah.
5% is reported. And of the 5% that gets reported, 11% proceed to conviction.
Yeah. And so keep that in mind as well. And then also what Sam had said about the idea of it being false doesn't mean that someone was lying. There's other things that can play into that, and that also skews the conversation. I guess just, I don't know, these days are, those kind of days are just super frustrating, because it's these moments where like this isn't about, I guess, just like the spread is so much bigger than just kind of your normal hockey pool, and you just hope that, you know, it gets treated with the care that is necessary. And yeah, Twitter's not the place, but hopefully the investigation is able to go forward in a, I don't know, good way. I don't really know how to say other than that. And we don't actually know the timeline on it, how long it's going to take. I think people mentioned when they were talking about it, like the Dale Tallon situation took a couple months, I think. So, and that was just allegations of him being like racist, I think. So yeah, we'll see, I guess.
The last comment I wanted to make was, and Georgia referred to it earlier about transparency, about the investigation. I think that is important, and that eventually when the investigation is concluded, that we know who the investigation team was, what the process was, not necessarily like who spoke or anything like that, but at least the procedures. But I genuinely thought it was not off to a good start, in the sense of what you referred to earlier about Travis Green being the one to have to speak about it. Like, and this is not any kind of critique of management. I would say this about any kind of organization. Generally, when you're facing these kinds of allegations, you think about who the message has to come from. Like, obviously the message is going to be no comment. There's nothing you can say. Like, and that is the advice they would have received, is to say no comment. But every organization turns its mind to who you put in front of the mic to deal with those kinds of comments, because it speaks to how seriously you're taking it and what level of management is taking responsibility for managing the process. And it should not have been Travis Green. Like, I'm not saying it had to be Francesco Aquilini. I'm not saying it had to be Jim Bedding, but like, you have a VP of legal affairs who is a lawyer. Like, you have people who are specifically trained to handle these kinds of things. And to me, it was just not a great message to leave it to the coach.
Yeah, I was actually wondering why they didn't have someone like read this statement. But yeah, I don't know. This, I think a lot of people, like once they moved on the radio, like once it moved on from the fact that like this had happened and these were what, this is kind of what people need to understand about, you know, listening to women, letting kind of due process happen with the investigation. The next conversation was, why was Travis not even like your coach who has not been re-signed? Like, that is a lot. And I think, yeah, I agree, it doesn't matter if the person sits there and has to say no comment. I think it still matters. And I think once we get to the end and we kind of look back and can kind of really dig into the handling of this situation, which again is really important, that will be part of the conversation that happens from the beginning. And so, yeah, not a great day to be a Canucks fan. All right, well, we're gonna pivot now into other stuff that has happened with the Canucks. I feel like the Nikita Trampkin situation is just like part of the season, like part of entering, like the movement from spring into summer is marked by the conversation about Nikita Trampkin and whether or not he's going to re-sign with the Canucks and come back from the KHL. And he didn't. And basically Todd Diamond, his agent, used the Canucks for leverage, which lol. And then also, I don't understand why we have this conversation about a guy who's not even that good. Why? Every
That's
year.
Like how embarrassing the Canucks are is that like we set all of our hopes on this dude who's like mediocre at best. But
he's just tall and he doesn't even like Vancouver. His wife hates it here.
He does not want to be here and nobody else wants him either.
He referred to it as a cloud of weed.
That's pretty funny.
I'm just happy he signed for 3 years and now we can just stop talking about it.
Thank God. Yeah.
I did think it was very funny that his agent was like, the Canucks wouldn't give us what we wanted. And then Jim was like, we were prepared to give him whatever he wanted. And it was like, how does this
keep happening? What he wanted was to not play in Vancouver.
He wanted a 3-year deal in the KHL and he got it. Just like, yeah. Anyway. Yeah. For people outside the market, this is a conversation that basically happens every year. Nikita Trampkin played one season with
us. And he wasn't good.
No, he wasn't good. The other Canucks news, they're on a 6-game losing streak. We can just let Mal talk about Connor McDavid for like 5
okay,
minutes.
So I haven't watched the Canucks games, but I have watched the Connor McDavid games. It's good. This is like, okay, so actually the Royals are good this year. So as like a long-suffering Kansas City Royals fan, I would go to baseball games and I'd just be like, you know what? What I want to see is somebody do something good. I don't care if it's on my team. It's fine. And so that's like this exact same situation. You're like, I want to see somebody play some good hockey. It is not going to be the Canucks. It is absolutely not going to be the Canucks. But Connor McDavid is just like fucking people up. I've been sending an ongoing update. He has 7 more points to get to 100, which obviously would be bonkers. And he is going to do it because the Canucks, I have also unfortunately seen them play and it's bad.
I hope he gets all 7 points in his next game against the Canucks. That's my goal.
He had 4 points in the first game. Two
assists
last night. Yeah, he had 2 assists last night. So I think they should just like let him play all the time. I think whenever there's a power play, make him play all 2 minutes.
Davo plays for 20 minutes.
Davo plays a full 60 minutes.
I was trying to say Davo plays for 20 minutes a period. I just didn't finish that sentence. That would be funny. He could do it.
I don't know if he cares, but the other people in the Oilers do seem to care about him getting to 100. During one of the intermissions, they were talking to Leon Draisaitl, and he said that they were all playing for him. And I was like, cute. These bitches gay. Good for them. I think about that meme all the time. That's probably the meme that I reference the most. It's just like, I have only seen it in, it's Sonic, and it says, damn, these bitches gay, good for them. And I just post it all the time.
Oh my God. So the other thing that happened in the game last night was JT Miller didn't play great. I think
he threw a bitch fit after Connor McDavid.
He got really mad. And this started this whole thing about JT Miller. He has an attitude issue, blah, 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 blah.
This team is not good enough. We cannot be getting rid of people.
First of all,
we cannot be getting rid of anyone.
First of all, how fucking funny would it be if after all the insanity about the JT Miller trade, if he's just gone, that would be very funny. B, he plays for a terrible team that is not good. The man has a little bit of an ego. I think that everyone knew that. We all knew that last year when he was our unsung hero, I think. And like, no shit, he's mad. Team is not good.
Was he on the best team to ever exist? He was on the Lightning when they were incredible. Yes.
And if, you know, if you can muster that kind of emotion for the Canucks in, what are we at, game 40, whatever, two or something, I don't even know, of the worst season ever. Cool. Good for you.
Georgia and I've said before, no, we have nothing against the Canucks if they want to clock in and clock out.
Yeah. You show up, you leave, like, good. He's mad. Like, that's fine. I don't know. I've never really had a problem with,
like, also people talk about like wanting emotion out of players all the time. The emotion you apparently don't like.
As long as he's not pulling the Keith Ballard, Thomas Vokoun incident, he's just getting mad. Like, I don't know. I don't really have a problem with it. I guess if it gets like out of hand, then obviously I just didn't think that was enough to be upset about. Like,
to be fair, there's like nothing else for the media to talk about.
Yeah, I think that's honestly why that was.
JT Miller, in all ways, is the most entertaining part of this Canucks season.
Yeah, and it's objectively funny.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, it's so funny.
So, whatever. JT Miller, it's fine. Also, his wife went back to America, so, and his whole family. Yeah. They're not here anymore.
The man is sitting alone in his apartment.
She was counting down.
He has to go clock in to play for this shit box of a team.
Yeah, she's like Instagramming about being home with like the grandparents and stuff. So whatever. That's pretty funny.
These really are the days of our lives.
You don't need that show. It was just a dumb soap opera.
So our soap opera for this week, I'm just gonna say it's the Rangers because I feel like it can be
the Rangers, and then there is literally the subheading of just Tom Wilson existing.
Yes, yeah. So, basically, I don't think we need to relitigate the whole like original incident. Basically, Tom Wilson like went crazy,
tried to kill Artemi Panarin.
Yes, yes. He like pulled his hair down. It wasn't wearing a helmet. He could have smashed his head on the ice. Panarin's out for the rest of the season what the Rangers said.
They only had 3 games left.
Yeah. So he's out for the rest of the season, and Tom Wilson did not get suspended. He got fined $5,000, but he got fined $5,000 for the original situation with Buchnevich. Yeah, so didn't get fined for the Panarin thing or suspended. A lot of people were like, this is kind of a clear cut suspension because A, it's not a hockey play. B, it's so clearly over the line. And C, it's Tom Wilson, who's been suspended 5 times, has given up $1.3 million of his salary in fines. And one of those suspensions was a 20-game suspension that was then reduced to 16 games. He was also suspended earlier this year for 7 games. So he's a repeat offender. He also went to the box and like flexed, which was a very strange decision to make, but clearly illustrated just manic behavior is the only way I could kind of describe it. Anyway, so that happened. Everyone lost their minds, including the New York Rangers, who released a statement that basically called out George Parros, who is the, what is it, the director of player safety? Is that the right title?
He's the vice president of player safety.
So Parros is kind of the face, I guess, of player safety. And they called him out and were basically like this. What did they describe it as? It was like, the wording
was dereliction of his duties and yes. unfit to continue in his role.
Yeah, it was like pretty intense.
Significantly stronger than anything the Rangers ever said about the Keandre Miller incident or Tony D'Angelo.
Yes.
All right, I pulled it up. It's
no, but what did they refer to the incident
okay,
as?
Repeat offender with a long history of these types of acts, and we find it shocking that NHL and their Department of Player Safety failed to take the appropriate action and suspend him indefinitely. Wilson's dangerous and reckless actions caused an injury to Artemi Panarin that will prevent him from playing again this season. Horrifying act of violence.
Horrifying act of violence. So then fast forward to earlier today. I don't know who first reported it, but John Davidson and Jeff Gorton left the Rangers. They were fired, but this was after there was other reports about them being very upset with the fact that this statement was made. And so other people reporting it had nothing to do with it, but it just seemed kind of sketchy, the timelines. And then the Rangers and the Capitals played today. Guess what? The game started with a line brawl. There's 100 penalty minutes in the first period. Buchnevich ended up cross-checking Anthony Mantha in the face. Not great. Tom Wilson actually left the game with an upper body injury. So
he also got a misconduct. So I think he left before that.
He was just like, bye. So we're sitting here and we're left with, A, what's the point of player safety? And B, what the fuck did we just watch?
Yeah. Such an absurd waste of time for them to even, like, they, it was inevitable that was going to happen. Everybody was like, oh, tune into the Caps Rangers game because this is going to happen. And it did. There was like 27 penalties or something. However many were like fighting and misconducts. I don't know, but like half. Probably.
They had one of my favorite things in hockey, which I do need to rethink, is when the penalty box is so full that it's standing.
It's very funny. I do think it's very funny when you can't all sit in the penalty box.
It reminds me of like when you're going to a party and everyone shoves into your car and you don't have enough seats and everyone's just kind of like huddled up sitting awkwardly. It reminds me of that. Anyway.
Yeah, it's just such a stupid waste of time. And this isn't like they've spent so much time, I guess, trying to like grow the game and showing it being a skilled, like fast game. Yet their biggest draw is that like you can punch somebody in the face in hockey. And that's like literally all they have going for them all the time. And that's like the only time that hockey ever really gets any coverage either is them being like, what the fuck? These people are fighting.
Violence
on a
happened.
Sheet of ice.
Yeah, in the States, right? Like, it gets talked about.
Yeah. Like, whenever, like, something on Twitter or something goes viral, it's just people fighting. Wayne Simmons fighting somebody went viral earlier this year. I don't know. It's just so fucking stupid. It's so stupid. It's just a waste of time. It's, like, not good hockey. It's, I don't even know what else to say about it other than.
The thing I hate about it getting attention in media is then you have all the people who are like, oh, like it's not true that people don't like fighting in sports, and like that's why it gets attention. It's like it gets attention in a bad way, like not in a good way, because people are like, what the fuck? And to the extent that people are talking about it positively, it speaks more to who you have in hockey media on NBC and on US sports channels. Like the people that they have hired are old-time hockey guys who talk about hockey in a way that does not in fact appeal to younger and newer fans, and who get relentlessly mocked on Tumblr and Twitter. And like, to the extent that you think hockey men talking about it in media, like fucking Matthew Barnaby. Like, you think that's a good thing? It's not.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people locally, I think the first thing that you think of when you see stuff like this happen is obviously Bertuzzi Moore, which stemmed from the league not suspending Steve Moore after he lay a very bad hit on Marcus Naslin and concussed him. And then in the next game, that's where the headhunting, or not the headhunting, but the, you know, we need to go after Steve Moore thing started from. And it obviously went out of control, and Bertuzzi, you know, has his own agency and chose to do what he did. And there's a lot of kind of fluke things that happened out of that incident. And I'm not saying that that condones what he did at all, but that is something that could happen. You have Buchnevich cross-checking Anthony Mantha in the face. Like, something could have happened and it didn't, but that doesn't mean that it's okay. And
for the people who are like, oh, it's fine that they were all having a line brawl and like the Buchnevich cross-checking Mantha thing was fine because like hockey is a dangerous sport and you consent to being assaulted when you step on the ice. The fact that Steve Moore sued Todd Bertuzzi and they literally ended up in court for over a year is like literally the only proof you need that you do not in fact consent to all forms of assault on the ice. Like, there are lines that can be crossed and you can in fact sue people. There are precedents for this.
Yeah. Yeah. Hockey can be like a violent sport, but there has to be like a line drawn of where the violence ends. Like, you can be like, factually it is violent to be coming at somebody on skates at like whatever speed and hitting them, but that doesn't mean you can beat the shit out of somebody on the ice. And it doesn't mean you can like essentially grab them by the hair and slam them into like the ice as if like you're like in a bar fight. I don't know.
Yeah. And I also like, I think, you know, there's more room for conversations around things like hits that happen where you can say like, you know, the speed of the game, or there was a bad choice or whatever, or something happened and a hit happened because hitting's in the game, but pulling someone's hair when they're not wearing a helmet, especially on the ice, like that has nothing to do with hockey play at all. And it's just like, I don't understand how you can sit there and like justify it in any way that it's not outside the parameters of what you're allowed to do. And then it's also, the question becomes, well, what precedent are you setting? And I think, you know, that video of John Scott talking about it, the incident was, well, if I see this, what can I do then? Like, you have Tom Wilson, who again is a repeat offender, which traditionally in hockey means that you get the book thrown at you. If he's able to get away with it, like, what is everyone else allowed to get away with? And it's just, yeah, I don't know. It's ridiculous. And I think, you know, like Mal was saying, what we want the game to be is fast and exciting. And we also, the NHL does such a bad job of protecting its skilled players. And Artemi Panarin, shitty dude outside the game. He's a skilled player on the ice. And so when you see this happen, you think about other incidents with Connor McDavid or other people where the league just doesn't protect the stars in any way. And that's detrimental to themselves because the people that they end up protecting are the old school hockey players, as long as they're white, let's be honest. And you see people like Brad Marchand and Tom Wilson get exhumed in this way that allows them to get away with this stuff because they're actually okay at hockey. They're not just your typical goon. And then you're like, that's who you want to bank your sport on? Like, okay, that's a choice. I think it's an illustration of kind of how behind hockey is, and it's frustrating, and it'll be interesting to see what ends up happening, because apparently like the Rangers calling out Peros was one thing, but a lot of other people had questions. There was reports that other teams had kind of questions about the way that player safety was going. And so it'll be interesting in the off season to see what happens with that. I mean, I'm not holding out hope, but I'm just intrigued to see.
Something else is that Tom Wilson is an incredibly skilled and he's an excellent hockey player outside of all of the violence that he perpetrates on the ice. There is no reason. It's not as if he is a typical goon who is kind of paying his way via fighting. There's no reason he should be doing this shit. Like, absolutely no reason. He's a great goal scorer. And like anybody, the reason that Capitals fans love to like aggressively defend his actions is because he's an excellent player. But then he just does absurd shit like this. And there's really no excuse for what he does. Yet the Department of Player Safety continues condoning it, essentially.
I heard Chris Johnson talking today, and he also said that George Parros has met multiple times with Tom Wilson to have in-person explanations about don't fucking cross the line, stop doing this, and here we are still.
Yeah, the thing is that he's been suspended so many times, I don't know why he has not learned. And I don't know if, like, I don't think that anybody is irrevocably impossible to fix or whatever. I don't think that, like, it's possible for you to be like, oh, Tom Wilson, like, he can never be a, like, decent hockey player. He needs to be banned from the league. But, like, what is the point where he will stop doing this shit? Like, because I don't know. Because it does seem like he should have crossed that line years ago. Do you think that there will be a point where people look back at hockey, like, as we look back at various, like, blood sports and are like, dude, what the fuck?
I mean, people do that to the Bertuzzi Moore incident all the time. It's yeah. still one of the wildest
and,
things.
And McSorley and Donald Brashear.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even, like, let's go right back. Bobby Clark and Karlamov, or whatever his name is. Karlamov?
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone tried to like use that as an example the other day to be like, this has always been a part of hockey and like people loved it. And I was like, Paul Henderson scored the game winning goal in the 72 series. And he literally was like, there is no room for that in hockey. So.
Sam, would you like to talk about Jeff Gorton and John Davidson coming to Vancouver?
God. So like after the Rangers fired Jeff Gorton and John Davidson today, which was hilarious. Like the immediate explosion on Twitter of Canucks fans is like Francesco Aquilini, hire Jeff Gorton and John Davidson. And it's like, okay, first of all, these are two people who have overseen the entire Tony DeAngelo debacle, whatever. Can't even talk. And like John Davidson was specifically asked about it. And he was like, we had an informal chat with DeAngelo about his social media use, but there is such a thing as freedom of speech. You are an NHL executive. Please figure out how basic principles of law work. You do in fact have the ability to control your employees in a private context. And maybe you should just think before you speak. And I like, there's other stuff about John Davidson that's out there. Like, I can't remember it off the top of my head, but like, whatever, John Davidson sucks. And then Jeff Gorton, I don't want another former Bruins exec, but also like Jeff Gorton was also the GM in charge, like during the Keandre Miller Zoom thing, all the Tony DeAngelo stuff. And these are two guys who were fired today for wanting to step away from the Rangers statement condemning Tom Wilson. Like, why do you want these people in charge of your team? And everyone's like, oh, well, it's because like Jim is bad. It's like, okay, but just because Jim is bad doesn't mean you should replace him with whoever comes available. And I appreciate that Jeff Gorton did like a decent job rebuilding the Rangers really quickly over the last few years. And I will give him credit for like stockpiling the number of picks he did over the last 2 years. But like, it's not rocket science to figure out that you should stockpile picks. Like Pierre Dorion did it. Pierre Dorion stockpiled more picks than Jeff Gorton has. Like pretty much everyone realizes that you should stockpile picks when you're rebuilding, except for the Canucks. And like, to the extent that that's your argument, I don't accept it. And then people are like, oh, well, he got Adam Fox on a really good deal. Adam Fox told everyone he only wanted to go to New York. You don't get credit for that. It could have been Jim Benning in New York and he would have gotten Adam Fox. Like, you know, no, I don't give you credit for that. And then he signed Chris Kreider to a 7-year deal. And like, I like Chris Kreider, but come on. So no, I don't accept that he is the obvious choice. Yeah. I reject this.
Thus concludes our soap operas. We'll be right back. time to name our three stars of the week. Mallory, you go first.
I mean, if somebody else wants Connor, I can find someone else.
No.
Okay. Well, it's Connor McDavid, obviously. I've talked about how much I love him before. I think in one of our early episodes, I do monologue about how delightfully boring I believe he is. But man's going to hit 100 points in 56 games. And it's great. I'm so happy for him. I'm happier than maybe he will be. I'm going to probably show more outward expression about that than he will. And I think that's fine.
Will you cry?
Honestly, I can like make myself cry if I just like think too long about the concept of him retiring without a cup. So probably it's mental.
I think the only thing that would end Mallory more is if Connor McDavid had a cat.
No, I like the fact that he like doesn't have anything in his life going for him.
Oh my God.
That's actually okay. I was going to say, speaking of cats though, I was going to say Alex Albon, if one of you else wanted Connor, who does have a cat whom I love. And I did last week, I was talking to Sam and I was like, somebody's birthday is May 11th. The answer is Horsey Albon's birthday is May 11th. A cat of Alex Albon's. But Alex did get like second in DTM testing. We love to see it. I will not explain what DTM is.
No, thank you.
We've already been recording for plenty of time.
Okay. Sam, who's your star of the week?
My star of the week this week is Ryan Getzlaf, because David Backes is playing his last game tonight against the Blues, and he has not been playing because he's old and not good. But he came out and basically said, Getzlaf went to bat for him with a coach and with management and said he had to play tonight against the Blues because it was a meaningful game for him, because obviously he's from St. Louis and played there. And so Ryan Getzlaf is my star of the week for being a good person.
My star of the week is Ryan Miller, who's retiring, but just a fun guy. Also, I really want him to come on the podcast with Noreen. So dropping the seeds here.
We need to figure out a way to make that happen.
I feel like we could.
I feel like we could too.
Does anyone know Noreen DeWolf? Any of our listeners? I feel like we just have to contact our agency.
The world is so small. Like, I'm sure somebody does.
You're like, Noreen, you come on. We'll let you talk about whatever TV show you're on. Please. She's always on CBS TV shows. She just randomly shows up on them. I think that would be totally fine. So Ryan Miller gets my star. He's very fun. And he once defended Troy Stetcher. And as we all saw this week with the cameo, Troy Stetcher is my favorite player. So, oh, actually, we should also shout out Alex Newhook is playing his first game tonight, which is so cute.
Right now.
So he can be like our extra star.
Yeah. The Avs have had both of their 2019 first round picks play this year.
Yeah, fuck the Avs because they just hurt me. Okay, this concludes our episode for this week. If you want to get in contact with us, you can. We're on Twitter at BroadcastPod. You can email us at BroadcastPod@gmail.com. We're on Tumblr, allegedly. We will hire a broadcast intern for the summer.
We straight up will not, because we do not believe in unpaid internships and we're out here not getting paid. So
we need a social media manager. I will tease our episode next week where our dear friend Clarissa will be joining us to talk about the Botcher Project and other fun things. So stay tuned for that. And until then, enjoy the world. That's all I have.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.